All right. Well, good morning, everyone. I know it's a very early morning for a lot of you. Who here went to the party last night? You are all my heroes. Thanks for showing up. I know it's an early morning. So, I'm Sean Oster. I'm a program manager on the Silverlight team, bringing Silverlight to Windows Phone. I did it last year. I'm doing it again this year for Mango. And today we're just going to give you a nice overview of all the cool things Silverlight that developers have to use coming in Mango. So with that, let's get started. So just a brief overview of what we're going to be doing today. Basically, I'm going to give you a little refresher on where we are today. A few minutes at most, you know, you all know where we are today. You're more concerned about where we're going tomorrow. What are the cool little features we're bringing? You know some of the big features, but there's also some smaller things that don't fit inside of a keynote that we'll be going over today. And as I go through all these features, one thing to keep in mind is there's some things that are coming in because they're part of the Silverlight 4 runtime, which we're upgrading to. But as we always do, we bring things that are unique to the phone. So I'll be calling out what's unique for phone, what's come in as Silverlight 4 that you should take advantage of, and things that maybe are a little bit different on the platform from desktop. So Silverlight today. So who? I'm assuming most of you are writing applications in this room? Big nods, sleepy nods, I'll take that. So as you know, what we have today is basically Silverlight 3, plus some things, minus some things. You know, that's where we are today. Now we have some great networking, you can write Silverlight or XNA applications, a great media stack, you know, we have theme controls, we support input scope, we have manipulation events, you know, phone type of things. That's where we are today. Tomorrow, or in Mango, what we're bringing is Silverlight 4. So, who here was a Silverlight developer before a phone developer? Okay, let's assume the inverse for everyone else. So you guys already know about Silverlight 4. You know about the features, you know that you want them on the phone, and the question I always hear is, why not Silverlight 4 on the phone? So now, Silverlight 4 is coming for Mango. And what does that bring you? That brings sockets. It also brings... It's not exactly part of Silverlight 4, but it brings Silverlight and XNA integration, which Scott talked about in his keynote. It also brings the webcam API. I've heard a lot of requests, where's the webcam? I want to stop hacking assemblies and bringing them in and doing things that won't get me past ingestion. Also, first class. You know, we've done some more things to make sure your applications are first class applications on the phone. You know, things like the web browser control now uses IE9 as the rendering engine. Control improvements, always making things better. And also support for more languages, so you guys can go to more markets. And then performance. There's a whole section on performance after me, where Jeff Wilcox will be talking about all good things performance. So I definitely encourage you guys to stick around for that. He'll go over a lot of these items right here. So these are the basic areas we're going to go through. I sort of did this last year. I'm going to do it again. Talk about general improvements, some little things that you might not know about if you're not a desktop developer. If you just to you, Silverlight 4 is just another number. I'll go over a few things there. Talk about the new things we've done for input, output, you know, networking, media, graphics, you know, sort of the usual overview of the platform. So what is Silverlight 4? Well, basically, if you go out there and you type Silverlight 4, new features, desktop, that's a really good list of all the new things coming. And I'm going to go over all those items in the next few slides. Here, this is sort of for the grab bag right here, the miscellaneous, really cool things. We made some data binding improvements. So if you've written any type of app of any substance, you've had to do some default value converters for formatting dates, for default values, for null values. Those come in the box by default now in Mango. Also, styling. You know, one of the things you do on the phone a lot is do some styling. We brought these things called implicit styles. And I'll show you a quick little overview of how those work. And then who is a big MVVM user out there? Good, I like that. So we're bringing support for iCommand, which is a big thing in Silverlight 4. I heard saw a thumbs up right there, which I like to see. So yeah, basically now for button and hyperlink, you can bind to a command, and then you can pass in command parameters. You can make a really nice, clean object model. Do a nice Bing search, do search for command, Silverlight 4, and you'll get some amazing, great articles. And the knowledge transfers right over. So what is it not? You know, that's always a good question. So we're obviously not bringing printing. We're not bringing mouse wheel. That's a little requested feature, so we just obviously didn't bring that. Right-click, again, harder to do on the phone. Drag and drop. We basically didn't bring things that didn't make sense for the phone. I'll just give you a quick little, I'll ease you into the demo world here since everyone's waking up. So what are implicit styles? Well, one of the big pain points, at least for me, when I style things, is I really don't like, let's flip over to a better view here, having to explicitly apply a style to an element. It's like you make a style, you give it a name, and then you have to go find that element and say, style equals this. It'd be better if you could just make one style and have it apply across the board. So just an easy, quick little bit of code here. Let's apply a style to these hyperlinks to make them a little more easy to use on the screen that's the size. So let's flip over. Let's go to our XAML. Come on up here to our resources. I'll drag a style in. So this is the normal style that you're used to seeing. Now, I have a target type, hyperlink button, but the one thing I don't have here is a name or a key. I don't have anything to say how you can refer to it later, and that's great. Because as soon as I've done this, every hyperlink button that doesn't have a style already attached to it will pick up on the style. Go to the designer, and they're styled. So that's a nice little trick, sort of useful. It's one of those things that if you don't do desktop, you might not pick it up. So input is obviously a huge feature. That's what you do on the phone, right? You input. So then the two big ways you do is for text and touch. So with text, how many people are not native English speakers? You get frustrated when you're, and the keyboard comes up, and you're like, oh, well, that's great, where's my language? Well, some of you have heard, some of you not, we're supporting now 35 languages coming out with Mango. And of course, as a developer, you want to be able to support that in your application as well. Also, you don't have time to do any wiring up between language support. So out of the box, the default edit controls will plug into the system keyboards. And if you're also from, say, a country like Japan or Korea or China, and you have these things called composition strings, as you enter a piece as a character, you get a bunch of suggestions that say, well, you enter this character, it could be this phrase, or it could be this phrase, or this phrase. If your language has thousands upon thousands of characters, it's really useful to have some more predictive text. That's coming in Mango. It's in the box. It makes internationalization of your applications, a first-class citizen. So for all those people that couldn't tell this on Tuesday, yes, you are getting your very own keyboard. You can use it with inside of Silverlight. It plumbs right through. And with that, you get some new events, like a text input event. There's two other events that are around IME support. IME is when you plug into this Japanese or Korean or Chinese keyboard. And then touch. Again, another pain point we've heard from customers is, I love your manipulation events, but how do I just get touch? How do I get tap? I just want a tap. I just want a hold. I don't want a third-party library. Well, we've added tap, double tap, and hold. They're off of UI element. You just hook them up like click, and you instantly get it everywhere. So output, as I was saying, we're now going international and truly taking it seriously. So one of the big reasons we took Silverlight 4 in the first place and brought it from Silverlight 3 to Silverlight 4 in Mango is for the tech stack. It's a really rich tech stack, which allows you to do a lot of things, but the most important thing is character shaping. So if anyone here knows Hebrew, I do not, but I'm going to trust that our rendering stack did this right, that basically we're actually not just aligning it on the right side, but we're flowing or shaping the characters from right to left. So that's, now your applications look like real applications when you go to other markets, which is a big thing. And sort of a smaller feature, but one, for some reason, is one of my favorites, mostly because I'm a horrible speller, is the red squiggly support. So now, if you hook up a certain input scope in your application, you get the automatic little underlined red squiggly that says, hey, you might not want to send this until you fix this word. So that's a nice addition for those of you like me who really can't spell very well. Not an insult to anyone, by the way. That's just for me. So let's put a few of those features together and see how they work. So I have over here, it's a little translator app. I use Bing Translator. I'm going out to the web, giving a piece of text, coming back and taking whatever language I have here. And I just hard-coded a few languages right here. So just to show that the screenshot wasn't doctored, flip over to the emulator. Pick a language, Now this we already had in 7, but this is brand new for Mango. Proper character shaping. So that's a big one for anyone going to other markets. So that's all fine and dandy. So where's the little red squiggly? How do you hook that up? Well, basically, if your application already uses the text input scope, it already comes in for you. So let's go to this text box here. It's already input scope text. Run it again. Flip back over here. Oddly enough, the pool in this place is more difficult to find than I originally thought. And now you get automatic underline to tell you that it's misspelled. You can click, pool. So that, again, that's just another nice feature of how we're doing first class on the phone. So go back over here. So controls, what have we done for controls? So rich text box is coming from Silverlight 4. So if anyone here has ever done like a wrap panel and a bunch of hyperlink buttons and some text blocks, entirely frustrating when you just want a little run of text with a hyperlink in it. And the most important scenario for that is a rich text box. It allows you to create one fluid stream of text, everything lays out properly. Now one caveat that I want to point out that is different on phone versus desktop is the rich text box in mobile or on Mango is read only. We got to a point in our cycle with just the massive amount of features we're bringing. It's like, okay, we want to offer developers something in this area. What can we do? It's like, well, the most important thing that we thought at the time was, let's make it so you can at least put a hyperlink and a piece of text and click on it. So that's what we brought. That's what read-only is. Another big change is the web browser now uses IE9 underneath the covers. We actually took the entire old engine out, ripped it out, and put IE9 in its place. So now you have all the great rich rendering of IE9, all the support of IE9 is now in your control. Another one is Clipboard API. Do you guys have the Nodo update with copy and paste? I know some of you do, some of you don't. So one of the big things is with that update, Silverlight automatically gets copy and paste support. You can tap on text, you can select it and copy it, but you cannot programmatically access the clipboard, which sort of makes it so you can't mimic the native UI. Because one of the things you can do in the native UI that you might not know already is that you can press and hold in certain areas and a context menu pops up and you can say copy. You can't do that in Nodo right now, but with Mango you'll be able to mimic that UI. A minor little thing, people that know Silverlight 4 know this, Viewbox has moved into the core. It used to be off in different assemblies, so if you wonder where that went, it's now in the core. And also Toolkit. I hope I have a lot of Toolkit fans out here. That's where I started at Microsoft, was on the Toolkit, so it'll always be near and dear to me. So we are going to release an updated Toolkit. This one's going to contain mostly just a bunch of bug fixes and improvements right there. And we're always trying to push to put more stuff inside of it. Your feedback helps us. And the more you say push and say we need this, that helps us get more things into it. So just something to remember as you're talking to various people. So let's put some of that stuff together to increase this translator app. So one of the first things is I talked about the hold event earlier. So how do you wire that up? It's really easy. So one of the things is when I'm typing here, I say I want to clear the text. Well, let's use a double tap for that. Let's come over here to this text block. Let's say double tap, so the event's right there. Equals. That is nothing what I wanted to do. There we go. And let's say when we do that, we just want to clear the text. So we'll take the translated text, clear that out, translate from text, clear that out. Here's my lone little event here. I will actually deploy this to the phone. Touching the phone is a lot more fun than the emulator. But only if it actually runs. Try this one more time. Let's unplug it and replug it. There we go. One more time. Hit translate. Can we see that? So let's go some Chinese. And then, okay, we have that, but now we want to clear it. Double tap. That's as easy as it is to now hook up events. Come back here. Now, another thing I mentioned was the Clipboard API. So we want to mimic that API that we've seen all over. How easy is that? It's very easy. So let's exit out of the application. Come back over to the XAML. So let's make it so when you press and hold on the text block, you can actually copy that text. So we'll grab a little snippet here. Of course, toolkit, context menu. Create this event handler. Flip back over. And how do you put data on the clipboard? Clipboard, set text. Let's get the translated text over here. Run that. Flip back over. A little Hungarian this time. So now if I press and hold, context menu comes up. I hit copy, let's clear that text out, and I tap here. As you can see, I now have a copy icon on where the candidate window is. I can paste, and there's my Hungarian. That's as easy as it is to mimic the native UI now. So one thing to know about the Clipboard API, though, is it's set only. So you can't get text from it. That was another sort of a security issue that we were dealing with. You know, you don't want... You know, with multitasking and the background agent stuff that's coming, you don't want a background agent sitting there sniffing your clipboard all the time. So we said, well, it's important to at least be able to mimic the native UI, so let's at least offer them set text. So as soon as you do that, the UI responds, you get your icon. Now, one little sort of helpful tip and trick for you guys that already have the copy and paste update, you can do multiple pastes. You just have to slide the little thing back over. So as soon as you do that, then you can paste again. I've had a few people say, oh, why didn't you guys have multiple paste? It's in there. Just in the version you have, it's not as discoverable. As you can see in this one, there's a little sort of gripper here to remind you that, hey, there's something over there. Let's go back over here. All right. So what's another cool thing I said? Rich text box. So let's show how that works. For any of those that don't know it, let's add sort of a footer down here. Rich text box. Now, it's a little more complex. It's built up of these inline elements, these text document elements, and they make up what a rich text is. So it's not just setting a text property. It's because you have hyperlinks, you can have different styling. So when you create these, whether it's in code or in XAML, you build them up out of basic building blocks. So for now, we'll start with a paragraph. Say, brought to you by me. So you can do that today. Well, let's say, since you guys are important, let's make brought to you so as you can see already, the U is bold. And this is sort of a bug I discovered this morning, by the way, that the space is not rendering for some reason on the design surface. It does in the emulator, it does on device, but for some reason on the design surface, it's not. That'll obviously be fixed. So that's all well and good, but the really exciting thing for your applications is being able to do a hyperlink. Hyperlink, here's the text. Give it the URI. And it's just like a regular hyperlink button. You have to give it a target name if you're going out of the application. And it has to be spelled correctly. As you can see, it's now a working hyperlink. And you can style each individual element with different sizes, different colors. We can deploy this. Hopefully the constant switching isn't giving you a seizure over here. And it also sort of does a little flicker at the end. Come back in here, and you can see at the very bottom, there's our rich text. One control, not a bunch of controls munged together. I talked to a few of you that had actually sort of a good thing going with your own rich text box fake control. I'm sorry, but we should have had it initially, and here it is for you. Now, if we want, we can crash the application, because there's another issue right now where if I type a hyperlink, you can't tell, but on my emulator or my Visual Studio, it actually just hit an exception. But as you see, it does properly navigate to the web page. Works exactly like a hyperlink button. Come back into our app, and then exit out. Maybe. Oh, I did. And there we go, out of the debugger. So those are just a few ways, as you're doing your applications today, start thinking in Mango how you can add different features to your applications. And these are one ways you can just slowly start tightening it up, reducing code, making it a little bit cleaner, a little bit tighter. Networking. This is one of them. I've been showing you some little features here and there, easing you into the morning, but sockets. Who here thinks sockets is just an awesome, awesome feature to finally have? Thank you. Sockets was like one of our top five asks everywhere I went. I would go to a bookstore and someone would see me and go, hey, do you know Silverlight? Because I'd be in the Silverlight section. I'm like, oh yeah, I actually work there. I say, oh good, can you give me sockets, please? This happened to me four different times. Two bookstores, a bar, and a restaurant. So I was like, okay, fine, we'll bring sockets. So we have TCP, we have UDP unicast, and we have UDP multicast. So the amount of things you can now do with the socket class is pretty impressive. I expect to see just a ton of great networking applications out there. Another big improvement that people have asked for that sort of got, doesn't get as much press, but is also highly useful, is full access to the headers. There's a lot of headers that you need to set when you're trying to interact with certain custom servers, certain backends, and it's important to be able to set those headers so you can your requests come through. So now you can actually fully set the headers on your requests. Another thing to take note of is that when you upgrade your applications to Mango, web client will now return on the originating thread. So if you have code out there where you have a background thread, where you have a web client spinning, and then when you come back from it and you just have something that updates the UI, make sure you go and wrap those in dispatcher.begin invoke, because they'll sort of break if you upgrade, because it'll start coming back not on the UI thread and it'll give you a nasty exception. So just something to watch out for. It's also a nice perf improvement because you're not always hitting the UI thread if you don't have to. So let's look at sockets. Open up a completely separate application. So this has about a 50-50 chance. This worked earlier, but it's actually going out to a machine at my house that's running a chat server. So we'll see how well this works. Nope, I was worried about that. But it sends text. You saw this in the keynote. And really my point is I want to show you how much code it is, how little code it is. Because in the keynote, they used an IRC client that already existed. So you go grab it, and you use it, and it's easy. But some people I've talked to are a little nervous about sockets, like, oh, isn't it really low layer? Is it really complex? How do I actually work with it? No, it's very easy to work with. So let's just take a little tour through this code here. So as soon as we load up, we have an endpoint. That was my server right there. Port 4530, that's the sexy part right there. It's not on port 80. Sockets, we're going TCP. But, of course, we also have UDP right there. Now, you can do, IPv4, IPv6. That's the full supports there. If you know desktop, you know this. And then we just have our endpoint, create our socket, and then we just connect it. We set up a few things here and just connect. That's it. Once it connects, You come back to your completed event. You get the response from the server. Again, it's not that much code. You just hook up some events, a little status message, and we bring some text so we actually show the user what's going on. Again, not a lot of code right there. So when we receive something back from the socket, how do we get the data? Again, it's very easy. We just grab the buffer, bring it to a string, we push it back to the UI so people can see it. And then we make sure we can get more data again. We just sort of keep pumping that data and bringing it through. Again, so far these are just three methods, not much code. And then once you get the text, we just add it into the UI here. And all these are just sort of non-socket related code. But that's it for sockets. That's all it is to start working with it. So let's go media and graphics. So obviously a bunch of webcam people here are very excited, I hope, to see the webcam is finally coming. There's a Silverlight 4 webcam. So that API already exists. That's sort of a push model, as you will, because you get these events that say, hey, I have data, hey, I have data, hey, I have data. There's another API on the phone that's more of a pull model. You can pick when you want to bring the data in. But since this is a Silverlight API right here, we'll focus on this one. So, and one exciting thing that's different for the phone is not only do you have basically an RGB format, you also have a grayscale. Grayscale, when you want to do really fast processing, when you're looking at contrast and boundaries, is more performant than playing with full color. You don't always need full color. Sometimes you just need that contrast. So that's something new that we've done for phone. Another big thing that is one of the things I'm really excited about is you can actually, instead of recording the raw buffer, you can record it straight to an MP4. Like a really common scenario is, I don't want to do any processing on my video. I just want to record a video from a third-party application so I can push it off to a chat client or some cool, you know, back-end processing app. And before, there's always different ways to do it, but on the phone, we make it really, really easy, and I'm going to show you that in a second. Another one is we've improved the battery usage. So if you have a page, say Netflix, and you're watching a video, and there's a media element on it, and the media element is right aligned, so that means it's a 90-degree angle, it's screen aligned, that means you haven't done anything fancy with a projection or, you know, some transform on it, and it's pixel aligned, meaning it's not on a sub-pixel boundary. As long as it meets all those three requirements, then we kick into what's called a scalar mode, where the video is actually rendered to a smaller size, and then when it goes to screen, it's scaled up. Quality is actually better when you do that. We've comparison side by side, you know, it's a little bit smoother, and the big benefit for all this is your battery life can increase up to an hour and a half. So just from watching Netflix on the airplane, and you land, and you go to call someone to tell you to pick you up, and your phone's dead because you've been watching a movie. Now you have an extra hour to an hour and a half when you're watching video, and that's automatically for free. Another one is, if there's any designers in here, or anyone that just has a design bent and you like a nice pretty gradient, you like the Metro theme, but you want to spice it up a little bit, and you're in the emulator, and you push an image out there, and you're like, oh, it looks great in the emulator. And then you go to your device, and you get this horrible, horrible banding. And these big blocks and chunks of color. And you're like, that's not the most attractive UI. And this is sort of a small sample right here of how that would look. Well, we've added a new mode. So right now, we're at 16 bits per pixel. And that's why you get this sort of blocking. We've added a new mode where you can say, when you're taking the image and you're rendering it to screen, start in 32 bits per pixel and then dither it down to the resolution of your phone. So the way that works is today, you have your image, and you'll push it, you'll force it into the 16-bit per pixel buffer, and when you force it in, colors get blocked off. But if you take that and you push it into a 32-bit per pixel buffer, and then let the hardware say, okay, I know that you're 16 or 18 or 24, it'll do automatic dithering for you and give you a nice smooth gradient. So you go from that to that, which is a much nicer UI. And the default is still 16 because there is a slight performance hit when you do 32 bits per pixel. You're just doing more processing. So unless you need it, I wouldn't recommend changing it. And lastly, Video Brush. Video Brush is a big one that we're bringing because Video Brush was, you know, in Silverlight and desktop before. And you can make some nice reflections with it. And some people will say, hey, where are my reflections? But the really big thing is you need Video Brush to do camera capture. So when you want a little preview of your camera capture, you actually use a Video Brush and you hook it up. So, and I'll show you an example of how that works. So that's actually how you get camera bits on the screen. Let's go back over to our sample here. Okay, I've set up a little bit of a skeleton, but we'll fill in the code, and it's not that much code to start encoding to a file. So encoding to a stream and then processing the buffer, if you type Silverlight 4 webcam API, you'll find a ton of great articles on this, and then nothing I need to recover. But what's new for phone is this ability to use what's called a file sync and encode directly to MP4. And I'll show you how easy that is. So first up, we need the Video Brush to actually display the bits. Find a good home for it. So here, I actually already have them in the code here. So we have a video player, which is how we'll show the video after I record it. And then we have a rectangle. Now, since the Video Brush is just a brush, you apply it to some element on the screen. So a Video Brush you apply to a rectangle or to any primitive. So now that we have our XAML, we can flip back over. So when we start, you know, how do we actually hook this whole thing up? Well, first, let's create some public fields. Only really three bits of information I need right here. One is the file sync. File sync is actually what you use when you want to go to disk, when you want to actually go right to ISO store with your file, use a file sync. Capture source is sort of the entry point to all your webcam and mic entry point, is you use the capture source to actually interact with it, to start it, to stop it, to set your desired formats, your desired size. So when we start, first we have to set up our capture source. So what is that doing? Create a new capture source. I say I just want the default video capture source. You can actually change what type of source it is, if there's multiple. Audio capture source, again, I say I just want the default one. Then I create the new file sync, and I hook the two together. So I say the capture source for the sync is the capture source we just created, and then I give it the file name, where I want it to store in ISO store. So now that we've actually created it, we actually want to see the bits on screen, though. So for that, we create a video brush. We set the source of the brush to the capture. That's how we actually get the pixels right there. And then we apply the brush to our rectangle. So we're just hooking up a few little pieces here to make sure everything, you know, tidies up and matches up, and you actually see some bits while you're actually also saving it to disk. And the last part was easy enough. I don't even need a little snippet for it. We just start it. So great, now we're recording. How do we stop? Well, that was fairly self-evident. Stop. Just like that. And now that we've stopped, now we want to actually display it. We want to do something useful with it. And here you could upload it to a server, you can play it back, you can, you know, do whatever you like to it. We're just going to play it back. So what is all of this code right here? So what we're doing, the first two lines is I'm just swapping the preview that we had with the actual media element that's going to play it back. Then I'm going into isolated storage, and I'm finding that file that we just recorded, because I actually want to hook it up and wire it up to my media element. So I go into ISO store, I pull out the stream, I set that stream to my media element, and I've already set my media element to say autoplay equals true, so as soon as I set it, it's going to start buffering and start playing. So how does that all look when it comes together? So one of the more interesting things to do with a camera is how do you demo a camera successfully without doing weird contortions and having multiple wolf visions? Oh, do we lock up? Or is it just hanging out? I'll let you see my struggles over here as we're trying to figure out what this is doing. Come back, start it up. Loading something. Just uninstall it. And then redeploy it. Let's try this one more time. There we go. Ah, beta. Who doesn't love beta? Camera capture. So you can see that's the UI that it hooked up. Now it's time for audience participation. So what I'm going to do is actually record you guys. That little noise says it's recording. Everyone give me a nice early morning after party wave. Woo! We'll stop that. Come back over here. Hit play. I don't know if anyone can hear that in the back row. Oh, but yeah, so that's what it looks like from up here if you're just curious. Very bright. And so that's all it takes to now encode to an MP4. Now you have an MP4 file. You can send it wherever you want. You can record at either 640 by 480 or 320 by 200. So you have two formats to pick from. You can choose different audio encodings that you want to encode to. So you actually have some flexibility with that and the file size and the quality that you want. So that's web. There's a webcam lover over there. So, I'm back over. Now, one little thing is I want to also highlight the gradients and just how sort of weird it was before and how to change it, because right now it's not as super discoverable. So I want at least somewhere out there to show people how to do it. So let's come over here. Let's go to my bits per pixel page. And as you can see in the designer, that is one smoking hot gradient. It's smooth, it's nice, it's not all banded and weird. But once I deploy it to device, not nearly as pretty. And that's an example of how bad the banding gets. And here's how you fix that. You go into your app manifest, your WM app manifest. You go all the way down here. A bit per pixel, go from 16 to 32. Redeploy. Ah, much better. That's how much difference it really does make by flipping that switch when you're using your gradients. So back over. Oh, and one other thing to remember, the tool should do this for you automatically, but there's new capabilities coming. So when you're working with the camera, it is a capability that you have to inform users of that, hey, I'm going to be turning your camera on and recording things. So you have a new capability to worry about, which is cap camera. So again, another thing to remember, another thing when you go through certification that you're going to end up having to deal with. So, who here is excited about the Silverlight and XNA integration? Awesome. So, was that a good moment when you saw that? And I'm assuming everyone that raised their hand understands the pain points of XNA development and then running into the issue of text. For those that don't, I will elaborate just a little bit. It's sort of an ironic thing where you can have this amazing game, this 3D flying monkey through a jungle flinging coconuts, and this just awesome game. And then you go to look at the leaderboard, the easiest thing out there, and it's just so frustrating for a game developer because you want your game to ship to multiple languages, multiple markets. Well, guess what? There's no real vector language support inside of most game engines. So every font you see, every bit of text are just bits. They're just pixels. So if you want to go to 5, 6, 35 languages, you have to ship a bitmap for every one of those language characters. That's a lot of size to your file you have to add. That's a lot of work and overhead you have to do. Whereas in Silverlight, we just say, oh, we have a language, you take the TrueType font, you render it, it looks great, it's crisp, it's rendered correctly. So that's why it's so great to have this Silverlight interaction with your XNA games. You can mix and match, and you can take this whole control framework you already have in Silverlight and reuse it inside of XNA. So there's two types of integration. Now, for everyone, I'm not going to cover this very deeply, but for everyone who wants to know more, please go to Brian Hudson's talk. He goes way deep into this, and he tells you exactly how to do it, shows you all the good code, all the good samples. It's a really, really solid talk. So there's really two levels here. You can do page level. So that's where you're on one page, and it's Silverlight, and you navigate to another page, and it's all XNA. And it's called direct rendering. Once you go to that next page, you say, hey, I'm navigated to, I'm in direct rendering mode, I'm now XNA all the time. And that's good when you're swapping between your main game and then your leaderboard or some kind of form that you're filling out and something like that. There's also element level. Element level has your XNA game, your XNA scene, and then you take a Silverlight element and you put it in a UI element renderer. And you say, okay, I have this, I'm going to put it in this UI element renderer, and it takes the control, whatever it is, and renders it as a texture and applies that texture to the XNA scene. So you get your control sort of overlaid and integrated in the XNA game. But it's not just visuals, it's also input. So you get full input when you do that. Now, one word of caution that Brian will probably tell anyone who goes there is, since you are just sort of overlaying, you don't want to confuse Silverlight by doing weird things to your, like, shifting that overlay, because Silverlight knows of where it originally rendered the controls. If you start moving things around, your hit testing is going to get off. Again, he'll go more into that, but that's just sort of a little word of caution. So how does that look? You've seen some demos, but I'll show you just a few more. Start with a little teapot. So right now what you're seeing is page level interaction. So with page level, this page right here is pure Silverlight. All Silverlight all the time. Now as soon as I come over here, I'm now in XNA. But now that I'm also in XNA, I'm also using some element level to display these buttons. Now, as you can see, not only do we have these buttons, but they're also localized in different languages. So that's the real power right there, is that you can get these buttons that have the correct text. You didn't have to ship a bunch of bitmap fonts on the device to make this happen. So it's fully interactive. You know, I still have full touch. I can change color. These are Silverlight sliders right here, which is why sometimes they're a little funky. And so that, where's my finger? Well, you get the point. So that's the Silverlight and XNA in the same application. And we can even go with an even a little bit fancier demo. Again, this is a full XNA scene with Silverlight buttons. And you can apply various, so we have interaction, you can apply various like storyboards as well to the XNA objects. So we're really bringing these two frameworks together. Now, one thing that when we work with the XNA team, they say, when you talk to Silverlight developers, remind them it's a good time to also start looking at XNA, to start programming, you know, learning the APIs. And they say the same thing to their guys. It's like, hey, if you've never done Silverlight before, start looking at that, you know, they're really coming closer together, and it's a great story. So we can back out of that. Performance. So I'm sure none of you have ever seen a slow or non-performant list box inside of the phone, right? That's a joke. Obviously, we know that list box scrolling is not that great on the phone. We know that. We've heard that. We're all so frustrated by it. That's one of our top performance issues that we've addressed. And Jeff Wilcox will go into greater depth on how we did that in his upcoming talk. But as you saw in Scott's keynote, one of the most frustrating things is when you're trying to work with your UI, you put your finger down, and it just doesn't stop. And more frustrating is when the native UI works one way, inside Silverlight, it doesn't work the same way. So that's a huge improvement we've done. We've moved all the input processing to another thread, and it's much smoother, much more crisp. Another change we've made is to the memory working set. Now, a lot of you, or at least some of you, with applications that go through certification, you get to this point where they say, guess what? You're consuming too much memory. Like, what was I doing? I didn't know. Well, we've actually reduced memory working set in most applications from 25 to 35%. So now you have more room to put stuff in there and then push up against that limit again and then optimize back down. So we reduced how much memory is actually being consumed at this point. Another thing that we've done, and this one's sort of an interesting caveat I want to call out so you guys are aware of it, is we've introduced a new mode to images. So basically on the bitmap image class, there's a property today called create options. We've added a new option called background creation. So what that does is today when you bind your image in 7, it goes off the network, brings down the bits, and then once the bits come back, it says, oh, I think I'll stop everything else on the UI thread, or I'll take up cycles on the UI thread, and I will start decoding your image, and when I'm done decoding the image, then I'll give those cycles back to the UI thread, which when you have a lot of images coming in, make for a very non-responsive user interface. So what we've done, added this new mode, and it's default for Mango applications. In this new mode, when the bits come back, we keep in a background thread, and we start decoding them, and then when the images are finally decoded, then the image pops in. So your UI is much more responsive, as you saw in Scott's demo. The downside is if certain times you actually do want more things to block on that image decode. The biggest one is panorama. So we're trying to change the template so that by default, the panorama control, if you have a nice big image in the background there, that we sort of do block on the image coming in. Because otherwise what happens is you get your text coming in, you get that nice turnstile animation, and then about a half a second later, your image pops in, which is sort of jarring for something as big as a panorama control. So for that, we're going to actually turn off the background decoding so it all comes in as you see it today. But for everything else, for your list box, for your list of movies and titles and all that, that's going to be on by default, and your text will appear, it'll be interactive, and then your images will pop in behind it. We've also done a bunch of other targeted speed and graphic improvements. You know, little things here, little things there, nothing specifically to call out, but just improvements in the platform overall. So things are going to just seem a little bit faster, a little bit snappier, more responsive. And so, I encourage you to stay for Jeff Wilcox's talk after this, and he'll go into all the nitty-gritty, wonderful details of it all. So with that, since this performance is right after me, that leads me into the Q&A portion of our talk. I know it was a whirlwind sort of tour of the new features. You know, like I say, go check out Silverlight 4, and that's a lot of what's coming in. And I've covered a bunch of the big things that's coming in that aren't exactly Silverlight 4 features. So before anyone scurries off, I just want to thank you for coming. I know it was very early. Hopefully you all had a really good time at the party last night. I know I did. And this morning was a little difficult, but I really appreciate all you guys showing up. So thank you, everyone, for coming. So with that, my favorite part, Q&A. Anyone have any good tough questions for me? There's one right there. So the question is the 32 bits per pixel setting at the application level? I'm assuming the question will be, because some pages you want dithering, some places you don't. Right now, it's at the application level. Correct. So if you do set 32 bits per pixel, you will take that performance hit across your application, wherever you're pushing a bunch of pixels across.
How does that help with Samsung Focus or something that doesn't support 32-bit?
So the question, I've repeated even though you were on the mic, the way it helps with like a Focus, which doesn't support 32-bit, is... today, even though the phone doesn't support 32-bit, because we're just shoving color data into 16-bit without doing a dithering process, you still get this really bad banding. Whereas if you go to the hardware with the 32 bits per pixel back buffer, and then you let the hardware dither that down to its native bits, bit plane, then you get a smooth gradient. So it'll maybe be sort of pixely and pocky like you're used to seeing in dithering, but at least it's a smooth transition.
And that's a new flag?
Yeah, it's a new option in the WM app manifest.
Okay. I guess my biggest question is, how does version compatibility work as far as, like, I'm assuming the new toolkit will be dependent on Mango, and obviously Mango has dependent features, so are we just to assume we're not going to support people who aren't on Mango, or will we? How are we going to support multiple OS versions going forward?
So that's a great question. The compatibility story. How are we going to support, you know, 7 apps today and Mango apps going forward? And there's a bunch of different levels to that. So at the platform level, your 7.0 apps, you know, are going to continue to run just fine on a Mango device. You know, that's obviously, we cannot break compat. You want to be able to just take a current marketplace app and drop it on the phone and have it work. We've done what's called Quirks mode. So some of these changes, they're new for Mango. If you're on a 7.0 app, they'll continue to work as they do today, and they won't pick up the new features. Now, as far as how something like the toolkit operates, you know, the toolkit we might just do a Mango version and a 7.0 version, where I have the different, or we don't actually have a good idea where we're heading with it, but we'll make sure it works for everyone.
Like, I guess maybe a good example is your clipboard. Like, if I'm writing something to the clipboard, am I going to do like a if statement that checks version before I do that call? And
so there's a whole versioning maze that can happen based on assemblies being loaded and the runtime thinking it's in one version, but then satellite assemblies not knowing what version they're running, and they're being loaded dynamically. And so things sometimes get confused if they're running in Quirks mode or not. So really, it's sort of best to have two versions. You have a Mango toolkit where you don't have to worry about, you know, pound defining or, you know, if-defing things out. And then you have a 7.0 toolkit, and you grab those. And it's cleaner. You don't have to worry about things getting into a weird state with Quirks.
And one more question. Your video that you made earlier, was that saved to the Photo Hub since you wrote it to the isolated storage?
So just before I answer that one, to also add, with Mango, apps that won't run on your phone will be filtered out. So as far as the compatibility story. But the video I just saved, you know, the video that I just took actually just went to my isolated storage. It didn't go directly to the hub at all. That's a good question.
Yeah. My question was, if you showed examples of using Silverlight content on an XNA surface, is the reverse also true? Can you have a Silverlight app with a localized window of XNA content?
So the question is about, you know, mixing and matching Silverlight and XNA, and right now I'm showing XNA with Silverlight content in it. And actually, the models I was showing were more the question you're asking. They were Silverlight applications with, when you navigate to a page, going into this direct rendering mode. Yeah. So right now it's sort of one direction. You know, you have one model that we build from. But in that model works, it does work great for applications. But if you're doing the mix and match mode, you're going a little outside the XNA boundaries. You know, the XNA developer is used to the game, you know, the game object. That is your world. This is slightly different. So you start with Silverlight, and then you work into XNA.
Yeah, but so, you know, just the kind of thing that I'm interested in is, could you, say, design a Silverlight control that that did its rendering using the XNA using XNA methods rather than Silverlight primitives?
So the question is about a Silverlight control that can render XNA content. And the answer to that one, I'm fairly certain, is no. Definitely confirmed with Brian, but I have a high confidence that one's no.
Okay.
Any other questions out there?
When you capture the video, you use a default capture device, right? Does that suggest we may one day see multiple video inputs in devices?
So the question is, basically, since I asked for a default device, could there be multiple devices? You know, bidirectional camera, front and back, and all those things. That's a question that I do not know the answer to, and I'm not sure I could answer even if I did. So, yeah. Don't have a solid answer for you on that one. Next.
Yep. You mentioned that you were on the toolkit team. I'm wondering about the transition content control.
Okay.
That was kind of one that was experimental, but it was really kind of exciting what you could do with it. I was wondering if that's being supported.
So the question is around the transitioning content control for transitions. I'll answer it this way. We know that a big developer pain point is being able to do the default transitions. how we're going to enable that and make that easier for you guys, still to close on that one. So one way or the other, you'll get an easier way to do transitions. It may be, you know, transition content control, maybe something else.
Okay, but that's coming in the future?
Yeah.
Possibly?
It's a strong possibility for the future.
Okay.
Any other questions?
You mentioned today the background decoding of images. Is there a possibility to cancel? Because, I don't need the images anymore. I'm loading, for example, 15 images, and after checking two, I don't need other images.
So, if I understand the question, is there any way to cancel image decode?
Exactly.
So today there's not. You can't, like, once the bits are in the pipeline ready to be decoded, there's no way to cancel it. That said, we are working on an improvement. It will hopefully make it, but it might not, where if you're flicking in a long list, custom, you know, behind-the-scenes interactions that say, okay, they've just flicked through 100 images, and the top 20 are already gone off the top. We don't need to do anything with those. We should be able to cancel those at least at the underlying layer. That's something we're definitely working on. Because you don't need to waste cycles decoding things you'll never see. That's a great question. Got one or two more? Right there, front row. So the question is on Bluetooth going forward. I do not have a good answer for you on Bluetooth. And going once, going twice. All right. Thank you guys very much.